28. Another option. Finally, I will confess my humanity. I have been named a monster, and do not deny those claims. I am the monster that I fear we all can become. From Oathbringer, Preface. The decision has been made, Teshev read, to seal off this Oathgate until we can destroy it. We realize this is not the path you wished for us to take, Dalinar Kholin. Know that the Prime of Aesir considers you fondly and looks forward to the mutual benefit of trade agreements and new treaties between our nations. A magical portal into the very center of our city, however, presents too severe a danger. We will entertain no further pleas to open it and suggest that you accept our sovereign will. Good day, Dalinar Kholin. May Aesir bless and guide you. Dalinar punched his fist into his palm as he stood in the small stone chamber. Teshev and her ward occupied the riding podium and seat beside it, while Navani had been pacing opposite Dalinar. King Taravangian sat in a chair by the wall, hunched forward with hands clasped, listening with a concerned expression. That was it, then. Aesir was out. Navani touched his arm.
I'm sorry.
There's still Thelenar, Dalinar said. Teshev, see if Queen Fenn will speak with me today.
Yes, Right Lord. He had Yakaved and Karbranth from Taravangian, and knew Natanin was responding positively. With Thelenar, Dalinar could at least forge a unified Vorin coalition of all the eastern states. That model might eventually persuade the nations of the West to join with them. If anyone remained by then. Dalinar started pacing again as Teshev contacted Thelenar. He preferred little rooms like this one. The large chambers were a reminder of how enormous this place was. In a small room like this, you could pretend that you were in a cozy bunker somewhere. Of course, even in a small chamber, there were reminders that Urethiru wasn't normal. The strata on the walls, like the folds of a fan, or the holes that commonly showed up at the tops of rooms, right where the walls met the ceiling. The one in this room couldn't help but remind him of Shallan's report. Was something in there, watching them? Could a Spren really be murdering people in the tower? It was nearly enough to make him pull out of the place. But where would they go? Abandon the Oath Gates? For now, he'd quadrupled patrols and sent Navani's researchers searching for a possible explanation. At least until he could come up with a solution. As Teshev wrote to Queen Fenn, Dalinar stepped up to the wall, suddenly bothered by that hole. It was right by the ceiling, and too high for him to reach, even if he stood on a chair. Instead, he breathed in stormlight. The bridgeman had described using stones to climb walls, so Dalinar picked up a wooden chair and painted its back with shining light using the palm of his left hand. When he pressed the back of the chair against the wall, it stuck. Dalinar grunted, tentatively climbing up onto the seat of the chair, which hung in the air at about table height.
Dalinar? Navani asked.
Might as well make use of the time, he said, carefully balancing on the chair. He jumped, grabbing the edge of the hole by the ceiling, and pulled himself up to look down it. It was 3 feet wide and about 1 foot tall. It seemed endless, and he could feel a faint breeze coming out of it. Was that scraping, he heard? A moment later, a mink slunk into the main tunnel from a shadowed crossroad, carrying a dead rat in its mouth. The tubular little animal twitched its snout toward him, then carried its prize away.
Air is circulating through those, Navani said as he hopped down off the chair. The method baffles us. Perhaps some fabrial we have yet to discover?
Dalinar looked back up at the hole. Miles upon miles of even smaller tunnels threaded through the walls and ceilings of an already daunting system. And hiding in there somewhere, the thing that Shallan had drawn.
She's replied, Right Lord, Teshev said.
Excellent, Dalinar said. Your Majesty, our time is growing short. I'd like...
She's still writing, Teshuv said. Pardon, right lord. She says,
Just read it, Teshuv, Dalinar said. I'm used to Fen by now.
Damnation, man. Are you ever going to leave me alone? I haven't slept a full night in weeks. The Everstorm has hit us twice now. We're barely keeping this city from falling apart.
I understand, Your Majesty, Dalinar said, and am eager to send you the aid I promised. Please let us make a pact. You've dodged my requests long enough.
Nearby, the chair finally dropped from the wall and clattered to the floor. He prepared himself for another round of verbal sparring, of half-promises and veiled meanings. Fen had been growing increasingly formal during their exchanges. The span reed wrote, then halted almost immediately. Teshuv looked at him, grave. No, she read.
Your Majesty, Dalinar said, this is not a time to forge on alone. Please, I beg you, listen to me.
You have to know by now, came the reply, that this coalition is never going to happen. Colin, I'm baffled, honestly. Your garnet-lit tongue and pleasant words make it seem like you really assume this will work. Surely you see, a queen would have to be either stupid or desperate to let an Alethi army into the very center of her city. I've been the former at times, and I might be approaching the latter. But storms, Colin. No, I'm not going to be the one who finally lets Thelanar fall to you people. And on the off chance that you're sincere, then I'm sorry. It had an air of finality to it. Dalinar walked over to Teshuv, looking at the inscrutable squiggles on the page that somehow made up the women's script.
Can you think of anything?
He asked Navani as she sighed and settled down into a chair next to Teshuv. No. Fen is stubborn, Dalinar. Dalinar glanced at Taravangian. Even he had assumed Dalinar's purpose was conquest. And who wouldn't, considering his history?
Maybe it would be different if I could speak to them in person, he thought. But without the Oath Gates, that was virtually impossible. Thank her for her time, Dalinar said, and tell her my offer remains on the table.
Teshuv started writing, and Navani looked to him, noting what the scribe hadn't, the tension in his voice.
I'm fine, he lied. I just need time to think.
He strode from the room before she could object, and his guards outside fell into step behind him. He wanted some fresh air. An open sky always seemed so inviting. His feet didn't take him in that direction, however. He instead found himself roaming through the hallways. What now? Same as always, people ignored him unless he had a sword in his hand. Storms, it was like they wanted him to come in swinging. He stalked the halls for a good hour, getting nowhere. Eventually, Lynn, the messenger, found him. Panting, she said that Bridge 4 needed him, but hadn't explained why. Dalinar followed her, Shallan's sketch a heavy weight in his mind. Had they found another murder victim? Indeed, Lynn led him to the section where Satius had been killed. His sense of foreboding increased. Lynn led him to a balcony where the bridgemen, Leighton and Pete, met him.
Who was it?
He asked as he met them.
Who?
Leighton frowned.
Oh, it's not that, sir. It's something else. This way.
Leighton led him down some steps onto the wide field outside the first level of the tower, where three more bridgemen waited near some rows of stone planters, probably for growing tubers.
We noticed this by accident,
Leighton said as they walked among the planters. The hefty bridgeman had a jovial way about him and talked to Dalinar, a high prince, as easily as he'd talk to friends at a tavern.
We've been running patrols on your orders, watching for anything strange, and, well, Pete noticed something strange.
He pointed up at the wall.
See that line?
Dalinar squinted, picking out a gouge cut into the rock wall. What could score stone like that? It almost looked like... He looked down at the planter boxes nearest them. And there, hidden between two of them, was a hilt protruding from the stone floor. A shard blade. It was easy to miss, as the blade had sunk all the way down into the rock. Dalinar knelt beside it, then took a handkerchief from his pocket and used it to grab the hilt. Even though he didn't touch the blade directly, he heard a very distant whine, like a scream in the back of someone's throat. He steeled himself, then yanked the blade out and set it across the empty planter. The silvery blade curved at the end almost like a fishhook. The weapon was even wider than most shard blades, and near the hilt it rippled in wave-like patterns. He knew this sword, knew it intimately. He'd carried it for decades, since winning it at the Rift all those years ago. Oathbringer. He glanced upward.
The killer must have dropped it out that window. It clipped the stone on its way down, then landed here.
That's what we figured, Bright Lord, Pete said.
Dalinar looked down at the sword. His sword.
No, not mine at all.
He seized the sword, bracing himself for the screams, the cries of a dead Spren. They weren't the shrill, painful shrieks he'd heard when touching other blades, but more of a whimper. The sound of a man backed into a corner, thoroughly beaten and facing something terrible, but too tired to keep screaming. Dalinar steeled himself and carried the blade, a familiar weight, with the flat side against his shoulder. He walked toward a different entrance back into the Tower City, followed by his guards, the scout, and the five bridgemen.
"You promise to carry no dead blade?"
the Stormfather thundered in his head.
"Calm yourself," Dalinar whispered. "I'm not going to bond it."
The Stormfather rumbled, low and dangerous.
"This one doesn't scream as loudly as the others. Why?"
"It remembers your oath,"
the Stormfather sent.
"It remembers the day you won it, and better the day you gave it up. It hates you, but less than it hates others."
Dalinar passed a group of Hatham's farmers who had been trying, without success, to get some lapis polyps started. He drew more than a few looks. Even at a tower populated by soldiers, high princes, and radiants, someone carrying a shard blade in the open was an unusual sight.
"Could it be rescued?"
Dalinar whispered as they entered the tower and climbed a stairway.
"Could we save the Spren who made this blade?"
"I know of no way," the Stormfather said. "It is dead, as is the man who broke his oath to kill it."
Back to the Lost Radiance and the Recreants. That fateful day when the knights had broken their oaths, abandoned their shards, and walked away. Dalinar had witnessed that in a vision, though he still had no idea what had caused it. Why? What had made them do something so drastic? He eventually arrived at the Sadius section of the tower, and though guards in Forest Green and White controlled access, they couldn't deny a High Prince, particularly not Dalinar. Runners dashed before him to carry word. Dalinar followed them, using their path to judge if he was going in the right direction. He was. She was apparently in her rooms. He stopped at the nice wooden door and gave Iole the courtesy of knocking. One of the runners he had chased here opened the door, still panting. Brightness Sadius sat in a throne set in the center of the room. Amaram stood at her shoulder.
"Dalinar,"
Iole said, nodding her head to him like a queen greeting a subject. Dalinar heaved the shard blade off his shoulder and set it carefully on the floor. Not as dramatic as spearing it through the stones, but now that he could hear the weapon's screams, he felt like treating it with reverence. He turned to go.
"Bright Lord," Iole said, standing up. "What is this in exchange for?"
"No exchange," Dalinar said, turning back. "That is rightfully yours. My guards found it today. The killer threw it out a window."
She narrowed her eyes at him.
"I didn't kill him, Iole," Dalinar said wearily.
"I realize that. You don't have the bite left in you to do something like that."
He ignored the jibe, looking to Amaram. The tall, distinguished man met his gaze.
I will see you in judgment someday, Amaram, Dalinar said, once this is done.
As I said you could.
I wish that I could trust your word.
I stand by what I was forced to do, Bright Lord, Amaram said, stepping forward. The arrival of the Voidbringers only proves I was in the right. We need practiced shardbearers. The stories of dark eyes gaining blades are charming, but do you really think we have time for nursery tales now instead of practical reality?
You murdered defenseless men, Dalinar said through gritted teeth. Men who had saved your life.
Amaram stooped, lifting Oathbringer.
And what of the hundreds, even thousands, your wars killed?
They locked gazes.
I respect you greatly, Bright Lord, Amaram said. Your life has been one of grand accomplishment, and you have spent it seeking the good of Alethkar. But you, and take this with the respect I intend, are a hypocrite. You stand where you do because of a brutal determination to do what had to be done. It is because of that trail of corpses that you have the luxury to uphold some lofty, nebulous code. Well, it might make you feel better about your past, but morality is not a thing you can simply doff to put on the helm of battle, then put back on when you're done with the slaughter.
He nodded his head in esteem, as if he hadn't just rammed a sword through Dalinar's gut. Dalinar spun and left Amaram holding Oathbringer. Dalinar's stride down the corridors was so quick that his entourage had to scramble to keep up. He finally found his rooms.
Leave me,
he said to his guards and the bridgemen. They hesitated.
Storm them?
He turned, ready to lash out, but calmed himself.
I don't intend to stray in the tower alone. I will obey my own laws. Go.
They reluctantly retreated, leaving his door unguarded. He passed into his outer common room, where he'd ordered most of the furniture to be placed. Navani's heating fabrile glowed in a corner near a small rug and several chairs. They finally had enough stormlight to power it. Drawn by the warmth, Dalinar walked up to the fabrile. He was surprised to find Taravangian sitting in one of the chairs, staring into the depths of the shining ruby that radiated heat into the room. Well, Dalinar had invited the king to use this common room when he wished. Dalinar wanted nothing but to be alone, and he toyed with leaving. He wasn't sure that Taravangian had noticed him, but that warmth was so welcoming. There were few fires in the tower, and even with the walls to block wind, you always felt chilled. He settled into the other chair and let out a deep sigh. Taravangian didn't address him, bless the man. Together they sat by that not fire, staring into the depths of the gem.
Storms, how he had failed today. There would be no coalition.
He couldn't even keep the Alethi High Princes in line.
Not quite like sitting by a hearth, is it?
Taravangian finally said, his voice soft.
No, Dalinar agreed. I miss the popping of the logs, the dancing of Flamespren.
It does have its own charm, though. Subtle. You can see the stormlight moving inside.
Our own little storm, Dalinar said. Captured, contained, and channeled.
Taravangian smiled, eyes lit by the ruby's stormlight.
Dalinar, Colin, do you mind me asking you something? How do you know what is right?
A lofty question, Your Majesty.
Please, just Taravangian.
Dalinar nodded.
You have denied the Almighty, Taravangian said.
No.
I am not decrying you as a heretic. I do not care, Dalinar. I've questioned the existence of deity myself.
I feel there must be a god, Dalinar said softly. My mind and soul rebel at the alternative.
Is it not our duty, as kings, to ask questions that make the minds and souls of other men cringe?
Perhaps, Dalinar said. He studied Taravangian. The king seemed so contemplative.
Yes, there still is some of the old Taravangian in there, Dalinar thought. We have misjudged him. He might be slow, but that doesn't mean he doesn't think.
I have felt warmth, Dalinar said, coming from a place beyond. A light I can almost see. If there is a god, it was not the Almighty, the one who called himself Honor. He was a creature, powerful, but still merely a creature.
Then how do you know what is right? What guides you?
Dalinar leaned forward. He thought he could see something larger within the ruby's light, something that moved like a fish in a bowl. Warmth continued to bathe him. Light.
On my 60th day, Dalinar whispered, I passed a town whose name shall remain unspoken. Though still in lands that named me king, I was far enough from my home to go unrecognized. Not even those men who handled my face daily, in the form of my seal imprinted upon their letters of authority, would have known this humble traveler as their king.
Taravangian looked to him, confused.
It's a quote from a book, Dalinar said. A king long ago took a journey. His destination was this very city, Urethiru.
Ah, Taravangian said. The way of kings, is it? Adratagia has mentioned that book.
Yes, Dalinar said. In this town I found men bedeviled. There had been a murder. A hogman, tasked in protecting the landlord's beasts, had been assaulted. He lived long enough only to whisper that three of the other hogmen had gathered together and done the crime. I arrived as questions were being raised and men interrogated. You see, there were four other hogmen in the landlord's employ. Three of them had been responsible for the assault and likely would have escaped suspicion had they finished their grim job. Each of the four loudly proclaimed that he was the one who had not been part of the cabal. No amount of interrogation determined the truth.
Dalinar fell silent.
What happened? Taravangian asked.
He doesn't say at first, Dalinar replied. Throughout his book, he raises the question again and again. Three of those men were violent threats, guilty of premeditated murder. One was innocent. What do you do?
Hang all four, Taravangian whispered.
Dalinar, surprised to hear such bloodthirst from the other man, turned. Taravangian looked sorrowful, not bloodthirsty at all.
The landlord's job, Taravangian said, is to prevent further murders. I doubt that what the book records actually happened. It is too neat, too simple a parable. Our lives are far messier. But assuming the story did occur, as claimed, and there was absolutely no way of determining who was guilty, you have to hang all four, don't you?
What of the innocent man?
One innocent dead, but three murderers stopped. Is it not the best good that can be done, and the best way to protect your people?
Taravangian rubbed his forehead.
Stormfather, I sound like a madman, don't I? But is it not a particular madness to be charged with such decisions? It's difficult to address such questions without revealing our own hypocrisy.
Hypocrite, Amaram accused Dalinar in his mind.
He and Gavilar hadn't used pretty justifications when they'd gone to war. They'd done as men did. They'd conquered. Only later had Gavilar started to seek validation for their actions.
Why not let them all go? Dalinar said. If you can't prove who is guilty, if you can't be sure,
I think you should let them go.
Yes. One innocent in four is too many for you. That makes sense, too.
No, any innocent is too many.
You say that, Terebanjian said. Many people do, but our laws will claim innocent men, for all judges are flawed, as is our knowledge. Eventually, you will execute someone who does not deserve it. This is the burden society must carry in exchange for order.
I hate that, Dalinar said softly.
Yes, I do too. But it's not a matter of morality, is it? It's a matter of thresholds. How many guilty may be punished before you'd accept one innocent casualty? 1,000? 10,000? 100? When you consider, all calculations are meaningless except one. Has more good been done than evil? If so, then the law has done its job, and so I must hang all four men. He paused. And I would weep every night for having done it.
Damnation. Again, Dalinar reassessed his impression of Terebanjian. The king was soft-spoken, but not slow. He was simply a man who liked to consider a great long time before committing.
Noadon eventually wrote, Dalinar said, that the landlord took a modest approach. He imprisoned all four. Though the punishment should have been death, he mixed together the guilt and innocence and determined that the average guilt of the four should deserve only prison.
He was unwilling to commit, Terebanjian said. He wasn't seeking justice, but to assuage his own conscience.
What he did was, nevertheless, another option.
Does your king ever say what he would have done? Terebanjian asked. The one who wrote the book?
He said the only course was to let the Almighty guide and let each instance be judged differently depending on circumstances.
So he too was unwilling to commit, Terebanjian said. I would have expected more.
His book was about his journey, Dalinar said, and his questions. I think this was one he never fully answered for himself. I wish he had.
They sat by the knot fire for a time before Terebanjian eventually stood and rested his hand on Dalinar's shoulder.
I understand, he said softly, then left.
He was a good man, the Stormfather said.
Noadon?
Dalinar said.
Yes.
Feeling stiff, Dalinar rose from his seat and made his way through his rooms. He didn't stop at the bedroom, though the hour was growing late, and instead made his way onto his balcony to look out over the clouds.
Terebanjian is wrong, the Stormfather said. You are not a hypocrite, son of honor.
I am, Dalinar said softly. But sometimes a hypocrite is nothing more than a person who is in the process of changing.
The Stormfather rumbled. He didn't like the idea of change.
Do I go to war with the other kingdoms, Dalinar thought, and maybe save the world? Or do I sit here and pretend that I can do all this on my own?
Do you have any more visions of Noadon? Dalinar asked the Stormfather, hopeful.
I have shown you all that was created for you to see, the Stormfather said. I can show no more.
Then I should like to rewatch the vision where I met Noadon, Dalinar said. Though let me go fetch Navani before you begin. I want her to record what I say.
Would you rather I show the vision to her as well?
The Stormfather asked.
She could record it herself that way.
Dalinar froze.
You can show the visions to others?
I was given this leave, to choose those who would best be served by the visions.
He paused, then grudgingly continued.
To choose a bondsmith.
No, he did not like the idea of being bonded, but it was part of what he'd been commanded to do. Dalinar barely considered that thought. The Stormfather could show the vision to others.
Anyone, Dalinar said. You can show them to anyone? During a storm, I can approach anyone I choose, the Stormfather said. But you do not have to be in a storm, so you can join a vision in which I have placed someone else, even if you are distant.
Storms! Dalinar bellowed a laugh.
What have I done? The Stormfather asked.
You've just solved my problem.
The problem from the Way of Kings?
No, the greater one. I've been wishing for a way to meet with the other monarchs in person, Dalinar grinned. I think that in a coming high storm, Queen Fenn of Thelenai is going to have a quite remarkable experience.